This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin is brought to you by Stoke Seeds. Select from the finest quality vegetable and flower seed at stokeseeds.com and get growing with Stokes.
Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio. I'm Dean Holland, the newest little transplant in the garden of Charlie Dobbin. How are you this morning, Charlie?
Excellent. Beautiful, crisp, clear morning at my house.
Yeah, me as well. Lots of snow up here in Collingwood and Prince Edward County is the same, yes?
Absolutely. Well, probably not as much as you because we have so much wind. I think a lot of it blew away.
Right. Yeah, we know we have lots and lots and lots and lots up here, which is making the skiing fantabulous.
I bet.
Yeah. So what have you had going on there? You know what? Before you do that, I'm going to give the numbers because we'd love to hear from you, okay? Anywhere in Toronto, 416-360-0740 or toll-free anywhere in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. We'd love you to call often. We'd love you to call early and one question per call, please. And if you are a first-time caller, please do let Carlos know because we will make sure we give you your garden wings. Okay. Yeah. So what do you got going there, Charlie?
So yeah, busy week. Spring is in the air, even despite all the snow and the cold weather. I participated, and I just want to let people know, many of our listeners will remember Stephen and Emma Biggs, father-daughter gardening duo. Emma is 16 years old. She's a tomato grower, excellent. And her and her dad have a podcast called The Food Garden Life Show. And it is podcast on all the regular platforms, you know, Apple, Spotify, etc. So I spent a half an hour with them on their podcast this past week talking about food, growing food and ornamentals together and how to incorporate, edible gardens and ornamental gardens all into one without looking like just a big rectangle.
Yeah.
Also talked about gardening in a wind tunnel, just to share a bit about what I deal with here. And some upcoming events quickly before we have to go to a break. One is, remember, the Riverdale Garden Club will be meeting next week on Wednesday, February the 9th, and that's at 7 p.m. Their person who will be speaking to them is Joanna Blanchard, 15 Ways to Garden Large in Small Spaces. And that's you can join into that Zoom event by sending a note to info@riverdalehorticultural.ca. Same night, I will be virtually up in your neighborhood, Dean, with the Collingwood Garden Club.
Nice.
I'll be speaking on the subject of grass to gorgeous, 7:30 p.m. So if you'd like to join in with me and the Collingwood Garden Club this coming Wednesday, just send a quick note to collingwoodgardenclub2015@gmail.com.
Okay.
Quickly, one more thing before we go to the break.
Yeah.
So we want to remind everybody, we have Paul Oliver joining us in about 15 minutes, and he will be sharing tips and techniques on loving the birds.
Absolutely. Now, we have to go to a quick break. We'll be right back. And I have callers on the line, including a special someone who we'll get to right after this.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed, we are back. And I want to give you those numbers very quickly and start calling in with your bird questions, because, of course, in about 5 minutes or so, Paul Oliver from Urban Nature Store will be with us on the line. 416-360-0740 in Toronto or anywhere in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. Charlie, I got a treat for you. I got Frankie on the line. Good morning, Frank.
Hey, good morning, Dean. How are you?
I'm well, buddy. How's retirement?
Well, listen, I just wanted to call in to say hi to both of you, because yesterday I had the pleasure of having a chat with Charlie, and she related to me one of the great little stories of rural Canada. Out on her farm there in Prince Edward County, romance was in the air. Charlie, first of all, good morning.
Good morning, Frankie.
So, tell the folks the story about the foxes.
Okay. All right. Dean doesn't know this story either.
No.
This is last Sunday morning. I'm in my kitchen making a coffee, looking out the window, and I saw a fox in the backyard, which is not that unusual. And then, lo and behold, I saw two foxes. And what happened was they were like playing. They were running and jumping and leaping through the snow like impala. I mean, like antelope. It was beautiful watching them. And I have a dog bowl, an electric heated dog bowl outside for the birds. But of course, the foxes know about it. So they were drinking out of the bowl and they're happily playing. And it was so entertaining. And then all of a sudden, spring and love came about. And before you know it, they were having hot sex in my bed.
Oh, they were getting a little foxy, were they?
Exactly. And not just once, but three times. Three times.
Wow.
What a way to start my morning.
That's great.
I just imagined that you've got a Lothario there with a kind of a velvet jacket and a smoking, you know, with Barry White singing in the background.
Barry White. And with Valentine's next weekend. How appropriate.
That was so perfect.
Listen, that's great. I won't keep you guys. I know there are other folks wanting to get through in the line, but I just had to call and say hi, thinking of all the folks that we used to touch bases with on the garden show. So to each and every one of you, Maureen, Paul, and all the rest, all the very best to you. And I just want to say one more time, I love you, Charlie.
Oh, love you too, Frankie. Nice to hear your voice, and I'm sure all the listeners are pleased to hear your voice as well.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Frank.
Okay, Dean.
Yeah, thanks for notching up the temperature here in my studio, about 17 degrees. I got to open a window now.
That's right. Have a good one.
Okay.
Bye, Frank.
Thanks, Frank. I think, wow. Whew, with that, we have to take another break. But we will be right back.
Cool off.
Yeah.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed, we are back. I'm Dean Holland, and I was saying to Charlie on the break that, holy cow, because of Frank and because of Paul coming on the show, this show is all about the birds and the bees and the foxes. We've got a whole different direction on The Garden Show today.
Come on. So, we like biodiversity, right?
We do.
That's what this is all about. It's
absolutely
all about diverse life.
Yeah, it's all about fertilization this week.
Pollination.
Okay.
Fertilization.
You should introduce Mr. Oliver, my dear.
I will like to introduce Paul Oliver to all of our listeners. Many of you will know him. He's been on the show a number of times. He's the principal of the Urban Nature Store, which actually has very many stores across Ontario. There's about six of them, I think. The website, of course, is urbannaturestore.ca. And the Urban Nature Store is Canada's birding store. So my local is in Kingston, but there are a few in the Toronto area as well. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. How are you guys today?
Excellent.
Yeah, nice. We're great. So great you could join us.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here to talk about my little my little feathered friends who I love to talk about.
All right, start talking. What's new and exciting in the world of birding?
Well, one of the things we often at this time of the year get asked by customers is about how to help their birds during the wintertime. Especially when we get a lot of snow down there. And there are a few things I really encourage people to do is first make sure that their feeder is filled. Fill it with as much fatty, rich food. We're not talking about Weight Watcher ladies here. We're talking about little birds that want as much energy as they can get as quickly as possible. And so in my feeder, I use a lot of sunflower hearts. It's deshelled. Mm-hmm. It just everything that they can consume, and they can consume 100% of it. And the other thing to add...
I have some of that too, actually. It's like a no-waste or no-mess feed, yes. So there's no shells. But it's a lovely mix of, like you say, sunflower hearts and peanut pieces and all kinds of really fat nuts.
Yes. Yeah. Really? And the other thing I also encourage people to do is add suet at this time of the year. Either put a traditional suet feeder out. But the other thing is, even if you've just got a regular feeder or a platform feeder, add a little of the suet nuggets, which is just very high fatty, high energy food for the birds at this time of the year. But the other thing I also really encourage people to do is, especially after we've had some snow or even a bit of freezing rain, is to clear their feeders out. If they've got a platform feeder, make sure that the snow is brushed away so that the birds can find the food. But the other thing that I notice a lot of people forget to do is when you have squirrel-proof feeders and they move up and down to close the port or the perches where the birds feed, is sometimes you'll get a lot of weight on those and they'll close and the birds will be standing there trying to find the food and the port is already closed. So just
right, they're almost frozen.
That ice, and that I noticed actually when I got home last night, my feeder at the front of the house was just closed a little bit, and the little feathered guys were all lined up waiting for it to be opened up and filled up for them. So that little extra thing at this time of the year, because the birds spend a lot of time trying to find food. They are spending a lot of energy just staying warm out there, and especially when we've got that freezing rain and it's covered off a lot of their natural food sources, that little human-assisted feeding is really, really important to the little guys.
Yeah, good points. What about water? Birds need water too, right?
Yes, water is really important. It's one of those things that we often forget about because we say, oh, yeah, we're close to the lake. We've got a river or a stream coming through. But birds drink water during the winter. And the other thing that the birds actually do is they actually bathe in it in the middle of the winter. Some people will put out heated bird baths, which are great. We always get a few customers calling in after they've put out their bird bath and they see the birds out there, that the birds are actually frolicking in the water and they're afraid that they're going to get cold or something like that. They actually do that to actually stay warm. It helps them align their feathers, produces some oils on their feathers so that they can actually stay warmer. But if people don't have a heated bird bath, that's fine. What I actually suggest is just early in the morning, take a shallow bowl of water, put it out in a sunny spot in your backyard, and for 2 or 3 hours, the birds can actually use it before it freezes up on them, and they can use it for drinking. Sure, they can eat snow and that, but the problem when they do that is they use up a lot of energy to just metabolize that. And we want them to use as little bit of energy as possible so that they can actually spend the rest of the time actually just doing their feeding and getting around or that.
Yeah, Paul, we have people up here in Collingwood that do the same thing. It's called hot tubs. They like to go outside and frolic in those in the winter too. So.
Yeah, well, a lot of people think of the bird baths as a little warm hot tub for the birds. It just actually just keeps the water just from freezing. So it's probably a little cold for us to try to dive into.
Indeed. Paul or Charlie, do you want to take – I got a couple of callers on the line, and they could have a bird question. Why don't we check in with Gabriella? Why don't we check in with her and see? She's calling from Richmond Hill. How are you this morning, Gabriella?
I'm very well, thank you. How's everybody? Good morning to every one of you.
Good morning.
Good morning. We're all well, yeah.
That's wonderful. My question is, I love birds, I love animals, but actually my question is for my cactus. I have a Christmas cactus. I have four of them, actually. Three, they bloom beautifully. And one, every year it bloom, but this year it doesn't bloom. I don't know what I did wrong. I'm treating them all the same. The only one, the three of them, I have them in my cell room, and the other one, it doesn't bloom. Didn't bloom yet. I have it in my hallway in the house. I don't know. That's a question for Charlie. I don't know what should I do to get the blooms. Somebody say put the coffee ground, but I put fertilize and water normally, but doesn't give me no flowers.
Yeah, so don't be doing any more fertilizing. Do keep watering as required. Make sure it's in as much sun as you've got, the brightest spot in the house. And it's okay if it's cool at night. The Christmas cactus, I find, very much respond to temperature differences when it comes to blooming. So if it if your house cools off at night, like many people will turn the furnace down, etc., that actually is a great way to instigate flower buds on Christmas cactus. So you may find that that will make a difference. And you know what? It could just be that it'll be a little slower than the others for whatever reason. And sometimes plants just miss a year. They'll bloom like crazy one year and then miss a season. And we see that outside in the orchards, and many, many flowering plants will have a big year of bloom and then a year of very little bloom. So it's actually pretty normal physiology for plants to sort of run in cycles in terms of the amount of blooms they even form.
With right. This one, I've been
okay, great.
For it's over 10 years. They bloom every
oh,
year.
Nice.
Every year, I bring them out in the spring, I bring them in the fall, and I put every time in the same spot in my hallway. I have a big skylight. There's a lot of light, and I don't juggle the temperature. I keep always in the same, and never no problem. Just this year, somehow, I don't get no flowers.
Well, so I would try... threaten it and then let me know how that works in about 2 weeks. Call back and let us know. I think you'll find it will come along.
Okay. Thanks very much, Gabriella. Fabulous. We're going to go right to Yasmin in Hamilton. Yasmin has a question for Paul. Good morning, Yasmin. Hey, good morning. How are you, Yasmin? Oh,
no,
maybe
Yasmin.
We lost her. Yeah. Maybe
there.
We lost her.
Appears to be there. Oh, yeah, lost.
Well. Oh, well. Let's try Mike. And Mike is calling from Dorchester. How are you this morning, sir?
I'm doing good. I have a question for your guest.
Fabulous.
Pardon me. We put out bird feed regular. Every year, all kinds of birds, multiple, until the beginning of December, then every bird stopped coming.
A couple of things that may be causing that. The first thing I normally suggest is if you've got a lot of birds coming and then they all of a sudden disappear, is take a look around for a predator bird. A lot of times what it is a predator bird has found the feeder, and the songbirds are scared because the predator is there. So sometimes what I suggest is if you get a predator bird, you may want to take your feeder down for a couple of weeks. The predator bird disappears. And then when you put the feeder back up, you'll get the songbirds coming back.
Well, bird at the feeder. Nothing.
Pardon me?
There's been nothing at the feeder. No predator birds or whatever. I've had hawks in the backyard in previous years. They come and then they leave and then the birds come back. But this has been almost 2 months. Nothing. No predators, bird feeder.
Yeah, and it could be that you've got a predator bird sitting in one of the trees up high that's watching the feeder or is coming by the feeder every once in a while, like a hawk or an owl or something like that. The other thing is sometimes is if you're close by, you may also have a lot of competition for food. A lot of other people may have put up feeders in the fall to do that, but my guess is it's probably a predator bird has shown up and scared the younger birds as well than the songbirds away.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks very much there, Mike. We have Yasmin back on the line. Yeah, we got her back calling from Hamilton. So, Yasmin, how are you today?
Good sunny morning to you folks.
Yeah, you as well, hon.
Thank you.
You got a question? You got a question for Paul?
Paul, I have about four or five bird feeders that I put out with black sunflower seeds. The squirrels knock a lot of the seeds on the ground, and I seem to be feeding not only a menagerie of birds, but a host of little mice that seem very happy with all the seed on the ground. What do I do?
Yeah, that's the case where a lot of people switch over to sunflower hearts, where you're not getting the shells falling to the ground, and you don't also get the birds going, trying to open a shell, can't open it quickly, so they just toss the seed over the side and onto the ground. What I find is particular in my squirrel-proof feeders is using sunflower hearts, the amount of seed that falls to the ground dramatically drops because the birds eat 100% of it when it's at the feeder, and then you're not getting anything that falls to the ground to attract the squirrels or other rodents that you may have that would be drawn to the shells or to the seed that's unopened there.
So you can also put a hoop to catch the shelled sunflower seeds.
Pardon me?
Squirrels will not eat the shelled sunflower seeds?
Well, what often happens is when you put black oil in, the birds eat the inside of the shell, and then they toss the shell. They eat the heart, but they toss the shell to the ground. And just the idea of food being there will draw squirrels and other animals to the area under it. By eliminating that stuff that falls down by using something like sunflower hearts, which is de-shelled and it's doesn't have any of that waste on it, because it is not falling to the ground, there's no attraction then for the other animals to come to it. If you're actually getting the squirrels going to the feeder, the other seeds you can actually switch over to that helps control the squirrels is something like safflower, same size as sunflowers. Not as popular with most of the birds, but, for example, cardinals love it. So I put it in my platform feeder for the pair of cardinals I have. But it has a very bitter taste when the squirrels try to eat it, or the mice or the rats or that, to try to eat it. They get a very bitter taste, so they stay away from it. But I would probably suggest the sunflower hearts is probably going to solve your problem.
And if I can jump in, one of the things I love about the sunflower hearts bird feed is that you don't get that mess on the ground below. So in the spring, you don't have to replant your lawn and rake out all the debris that has fallen. It's perfect beneath the feeder. It's very tidy. I like it a lot.
Okay. I'll have to look for that. I think with feeding, you know, with having four or five feeders, it does get a bit expensive. So I would have to look into that too.
Yeah, the one thing you'll find with sunflower hearts is 10 pounds of sunflower hearts is about the equivalent of what you would normally use of about 30 pounds of black oil, just because of the amount of stuff that gets tossed to the ground and all the extra shell that the birds aren't eating and they're just tossing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll try that because I do like to have a variety, and I do get a variety of birds, not just cardinals. I mean, I get the whole lot, and then I have suet feeders, and I have the woodpeckers, and the little nuthatches coming to that, too. So it's beautiful to watch.
Yeah, and with
fabulous. Yasmin, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. Bye.
Paul, that must be an ongoing issue. I know I did some reading months ago about how to sort of squirrel-proof a lot of feeders.
Yeah, it's what I there are lots of great squirrel-proof feeders out on the market. Just need to make sure that they're properly tested or that. But I also say it's the 212-inch rule is make sure that the feeder is hanging out by itself from a pole or a fence or anything like that. So from where the squirrel can hang to reaching the feeder port needs to be at least 12 inches. And therefore they can't actually hang out the top of the feeder and still feed into it or things like that. So if you hit the 212-inch rule, you'll have a pretty effective squirrel-proof feeder.
Okay, fabulous. I've got another caller with a question for you, Paul. We're going to the city of St. Catharines now to Rose. Good morning, Rose.
Good morning, and hi, Paul. Very nice to hear you this morning. And
good morning.
I'm an avid shopper at your Urban Nature store here in St. Catharines.
Wonderful.
And Kim and Chris are great in the store. They work in the store, and they're always very helpful for me. And I love buying. I get the shelled sunflower seeds there, as well as the millet, and I like the peanut hasc. They're a very popular addition to my bird feeders, as well as for the squirrels, because of course I can't leave them out. Nature, where birds go, all nature tries to follow, right? And my question to you this morning, though, is I also put the the peanuts in the shell up for my woodpeckers and nut hatches that come around. But I also have suet feeder. But I'm finding when it gets very cold, they don't even go to that because it seems like if I put my finger and my nail in it, it's frozen solid. Do you have any suggestions for that?
Yeah, and in particular when you get really cold weather, both the seed will freeze as well as the suet. And what I actually suggest is using some of the suets that have a higher fat content. So if you look in the store, you'll actually see some suets that have, like our summer suets, or that will accommodate high temperatures in the summer. Those are the ones I generally avoid during the winter because they're actually designed so that they don't melt in the summer, but they also freeze quicker in the fall or in the winter. There's a line that we actually carry that's actually made here, right here in Ontario, Mill Creek suet. It's very, very high and rich in fatty content, and that's the one I actually switch over to in the wintertime. And in the really cold winter, I actually find that it'll even freeze at nighttime. But what I try to do is hang my suet feeder so that it gets that morning sun. And that little bit of morning sun just sort of warms it up a little bit and helps the birds be able to peck through the first inch or so of it, even if it's been out over the night and it's become quite hard.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for your help. I also, what I did last week when I was in the store, I purchased those little round peanut nuggets which have fat in it. I find they're great. I'll take a handful and sometimes I'll just crumble them up a little bit and I'll throw them because I do put seed on the ground as well for my birds that like to eat on the ground, right? Like my mourning doves and the cardinals like to go down there. And also the sparrows do that and all the other ones. But and I'll do that and I find that is good because that's still at warm temperature in the house and I'll just take a handful of those nuggets and throw them out.
Yeah.
So that's a wonderful thing that your store carries.
Yes, those were the suet nuggets that I was mentioning early that you
yes.
can just mix right into your feeders. They work great in platform feeders. And a lot of people like yourself just sprinkle some of them on the ground for our ground feeding birds in the morning. It's their morning breakfast treats that they love.
Yes,
wow.
Thank you so much.
Good information.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Rose.
Yeah, and Paul, we're unfortunately going to have to let you go. Excuse me, but I want to really thank you for sharing some of your great knowledge. We clearly have some serious birders on the Garden Show.
Yes. And just before I go, I wanted to let your listeners know that if they go to the urbannaturestore.ca website this morning, very top of it, there's a black banner there, and there's an area where they can enter a secret code. If they click on that secret code and enter the secret word of snow, everyone can remember
Ooh.
Snow, and we will actually send everyone a $10 gift card that they can use either online at urbannaturestore.ca or in any of our eight store locations.
Sweet. Thank you so much.
A little
and
bonus,
is that just good for today to put
birdie.
In the word snow?
The word is snow.
But it will, and does that only work today for the gift certificate, or is that
it'll
going to stay up on your
site? Yeah, so it'll be up there until Sunday evening, yeah? But you can use the gift card at any time. Once you enter it, it'll be sent to you, and you can use it whenever you want to visit one of the stores or take a look at products online at urbannaturestore.ca.
Oh, I'll be getting one of those for sure. Thank you.
I'm in there, too. That's great. Thanks so much, Paul. It's been
a
wealth of knowledge.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Talk again soon.
Great. Okay, so we have to go to a break, but when we come back, I do have a caller on the line. Okay, we'll be right back.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We are back here for The Garden Show. And I'm going to give those numbers out again, because we'd love to hear from you if you have any questions. And we're all waiting here. 416-360-0740 in the Toronto area or anywhere else in the province of Ontario. 1-866-740-4740. And that is a toll-free call. And I do have I have Dan on the line, and he's calling in from Brampton. How are you this morning, Dan?
Hi, good. How are you guys doing?
I'm well.
Yeah, Oh, I guess I got a question for Paul, but I can ask anyway, I guess. I have a bird feeder I put out about a month ago, and I haven't had any birds come visit it.
And welcome to my world. It takes a little while for the birds to find your feeders.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, yes, like, are you in a, like, sort of the suburban part of Brampton or more outside the town, the city?
Well, it's in the suburb, yeah. It's a big backyard, but they're hiding.
I find it makes a difference if some of your other neighbors are feeding, and then the birds will be, you know, flittering and fluttering around the area. But when I moved here, where I'm on quite a large lot, and it's all wild birds, like, nobody has fed a bird in my neighborhood in 5,000 years. So it's taken a little while for the birds to find the feeders. It was not instant by any means. And here I am 2.5 years later, and I still only have chickadees, finches, and juncos, and mourning doves. I have some woodpeckers. Like, it's quite limited. I'm going to put out more feeders around the yard and expand my feeding locations, and maybe that would make a difference for you too. The more feeders, and remember, you want your feeders near shelter, like near something where they can be safe from a hawk or something like that. So you always want that sort of cedar hedge about 10 feet away, or, you know, big evergreen, something, because my feeding station right now is quite exposed. And so I think that's part of the reason many of the birds do not want to be out and exposed at my feeders, only the really brave ones.
Oh, okay.
All right. Be patient.
Yeah, we'll wait for them to come by. Okay.
Great. Thanks for the call, Dan.
Yeah, okay, thank you. And don't forget to pick up your $10 gift certificate from the urbannaturestore.ca. $10 gift certificate for anybody who puts in the secret code SNOW.
Yeah, and that's between now and Sunday, I guess, at midnight. It'll be on over the weekend. Now, Charlie, before you moved out to Prince Edward County, were you a birder, or did you have feeders in your yard prior to your move?
I did, yeah. Exactly. Well, it's all part of that whole biodiversity, and I brought my feeders with me. So, but I had a lot of cardinals in my last home because I was quite a protected suburban lot. So it started with a pair, and you heard Paul refer to a pair of cardinals because they mate forever. But then I had two pairs, and then I had three pairs, and then I had four pairs. So I had quite a flock of cardinals, but they had a cedar hedge close by. And on really, really cold days, it was so sweet because they tucked their little bodies into the hedge where the sun was hitting the south side of the hedge. So the sun was warming them up, but they were protected inside the hedge. And they're like little red ornaments in the green hedge. It was really, really pretty. And so, yeah, I know I'm a huge fan of feeding the birds, but I'm a real neophyte at knowing what bird is who. I only know the real regular ones. Like, we have lots of blue jays here, and they are so loud.
Yeah. Now, so my question was, I mean, did you feed them all year round? Because it's always seemed to me that, you know, the more important time of the year to feed them is during the winter, because I figured it's harder to find food. But do you do it all year round?
I do, but you're absolutely right. If you're going to feed in the winter, you have to maintain and be consistent with feeding, because they always say they will rely on you. And that makes sense, that if you become, you know, the local takeout restaurant for the bird population, then you've got to make sure you're open all the time in the winter. The summer is not that important. I did generally feed in the summer as well. And of course, the squirrels were so entertaining. I mean, Paul was talking about the 12-inch rule, but I had squirrels. It felt like they were like flying squirrels. They would, I had like tomato cages in the garden that were left over from the summer and the tomatoes.
Yeah.
And they would literally fly from a tomato cage to the feeders, which were definitely more than 12 inches away. And I couldn't get the cages out because they were frozen in the ground. So I thought, I went out there in the middle of winter with Vaseline, and I Vaselined the tomato cages. So the squirrels could not jump from the cages to the bird feeders. They just went flop onto the ground. It was pretty funny.
It's like having a little circus in your backyard.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Very
okay. We have to take another quick break, and then I think we have a caller on the line. Okay, we will be right back.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Dean Holland, and I'm here with Charlie Dobbin. Charlie in her home studio in Prince Edward County, and I'm up in Collingwood today. And we have Barb on the line calling from Aden. How are you this morning, Barb?
Oh, hi. I'm okay. What about you?
We're good. We're good. We're warmer than the birds are, I think, because we're inside.
I was just wondering what would be the best bird feed to attract cardinals.
Ah, good question. So Paul alluded to that when he was here with us. Probably should have kept him on till the end of the show because there was a lot of questions. Maybe next time. Safflower. So S.
How is that spelled? I tried to find that and I couldn't find. How is that spelled?
S as in Sam. A. F as in Frank. And then the word flower, so safflower.
Oh,
and it looks a lot like he suggested, like sunflower hearts. So like a sunflower, the inside part of the sunflower without the shell.
Uh-huh.
Cardinals love safflower, and very few other birds do. So it's an excellent way to attract cardinals. Once they know it's there, they will come in droves, and they will just keep coming because they love safflower. Their beaks are designed specifically to break into the safflower seed, well, safflower grain. Other birds can't get through it.
Oh, okay. Now, would you just leave that just as a single seed, like food, or would you mix it like with other mixed?
You could.
Yeah,
it depends on your feeder, Barb. Cardinals will not eat out of a cylindrical feeder the way, you know, the finches and the chickadees will. Cardinals are have evolved to eat off of flat surfaces like the ground, or as Paul mentioned, a platform feeder. So it's a flat, literally a platform hanging from cables from a tree branch or wherever, and then they come in, they land, and then they peck at the ground or the platform surface. So basically what you do is just spread the safflower out on that feeder, but for sure you can always throw in a little bit of, as he was suggesting, little bits of suet or a little bit of sunflower seed. You can mix it up, not a problem at all.
Oh, okay. All right, well, thank you so
great.
Much
yeah
okay. Thanks, Barb.
Okay.
Bye. Yeah.
Hey, so do you have any bird feeders at your place?
You know what? I don't. I have to say it's something on my list to do, and I have all that shelter that you've talked about in the back of the house where I actually probably wouldn't put the feeders, but we have like 10-foot high cedar hedges, and I'm always seeing birds in there, including some cardinals. And we have literally like 150 feet long of these, you know, these hedges. And
right.
In the front, we also have shelter. We have a flowering crab. We have a couple of big blue spruces. And so I have the area to put it in. But I was doing some reading to figure out what type of feeders to put in, how to string them up so the squirrels can't get to them. So I'm just not there yet.
Well, and also you have a lot on your plate, Dean. You're still raising 4 children and you're working multi jobs. So don't feel bad. You know, bird feeding it's almost like being a parent again, but you do it once you don't have to be so on deck as a parent of teenagers.
Yeah, that was kind of my thinking. I know during the lockdown, one of the things that I was considering doing, and again, I guess we did other things, but I thought, I should make some bird feeders with the kids, with my younger two. We just never got it done. But it's true. I have a lot on my plate right now, but I would really like to do it. My dad was an avid birder, which I think I mentioned last week. He loved the birds, and he loved to keep track of what was in his garden, and he loved all of that stuff. So there's a part of me, I think, that almost kind of wants to dabble around in it because my dad did.
You will. You've got lots of time still. You're still a very young man.
Well, thank you. You need to email my kids. You need to tell them.
I know. My kids think I was born when the dinosaurs were still roaming the earth.
You and me both. Yeah, we were. Yeah, from bedrock. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. What do you got? I don't know that we have time for a
Let's do a quick. We can do a quick email.
Yeah, quick one. So I have an email from Audrey in Kitchener who's talking about rejuvenating an old garden that she's used for about 40 years. She puts compost and manure on it each year, plus leaves in the fall. But the last few years, it hasn't done very good. It's used mostly for vegetables. And she says, I'm getting too old to start a new garden. Is it quite large? Or it is quite large, and maybe I don't have enough compost. About topsoil? She's asking about topsoil.
Yeah, so Audrey, I hear you. Do not start a new garden. I would work with what you've already got because it's there now. The main thing is you want to rejuvenate. And one thing you can't go wrong with is adding organic matter. So whether it's composted manure or triple mix or your own homemade compost, you always can improve any soil with organic matter. So that's number one. But before you even get to the organic matter, do a soil test. You can do a soil test where you send the soil in to one of the ministry laboratories. It'll cost you about $65. Or you can say, no, I don't want to go that extreme. But you can get some home soil tests. They're available at, you know, Canadian Tires, Home Hardwares. Home soil test. At least find out the pH of your soil. Find out a little bit about what the nutrient value is in your soil. And get that organic matter cranked on. You want a pH of about 6.7. That's what you're aiming for. And organic matter will help you achieve that. So thanks for your letter. Thanks for your email. Thank you, Carlos and Dean. You guys have been great. Thanks, Paul Oliver. Don't forget the code word snow. And next week, another special guest will be joining us. And many of you will remember Terry Kennedy from the Southern Ontario Orchid Society. She'll be here to talk about everything orchid just in time for Valentine's Day. See you then.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.